You're listening to the New World to Go podcast with your hosts, Redbird and BDLG.
Hello and welcome to another episode of New World to Go. I'm your host, Redbird, and with me is BDLG. Bordy, we got another crazy week. The hits keep coming, dude. Yeah. They just keep putting stuff out. The amount of information about New World on a weekly basis is absolutely insane. I mean, we might even hit the over 1 hour mark today because there is a lot here. So we'll just dive right in. First and foremost, thank you guys for all the 5-star rating and review. We really appreciate it. We don't have any this week, right? Other than, we don't have any written ones this week, correct?
Yeah, no written ones this week, but we had a couple of 5-stars. So thank you guys so much for that. We appreciate it very much.
And thank you for the YouTube subs. Don't forget to hit that subscription button, the notification bell for more New World content like this. We'll be putting up a ton of more information and more videos for you soon. So let's hop right in here with the news. All right. So we got a ton of news this week. We're going to start with the disabled trade thing because it's the most recent one. Of course, if you've been playing New World within the past, couple hours, you'll notice that trading has been disabled again. And that's not just trading. It's all wealth trading, which means the trading posts are also down. Another duping bug was found. Not a lot to say here, Bordy, other than maybe, you know, the frequency in which these bugs are being exploited and found. What are your thoughts on a new duping bug that has now shut down Wealth Exchange?
Well, I mean, it sucks. That's the simple way to put it.
Great
analysis, sucks.
Dude.
I'm just saying what everybody else thinks as well. Like, it sucks. Nobody wants to see these duping bugs creep their way into the game. But at the end of the day, man, we're a month and a half into the game. So these things are gonna happen. I wouldn't be surprised if this wasn't the last one that we see. They're gonna happen, man. There's MMOs now that have been out for years and years that still are plagued by having these issues from time to time. So it's at the rate at which they can kind of squash these issues is kind of the real test, I think. And I think so far they've done a pretty good job of squashing these issues and addressing them in a timely manner. But having duping bugs is just, it sucks, man. And I hope that over time we continue to see like less and less and less of these types of issues crop up, because it is bad. It is bad press for the game. It's negative for the game. But I also think they do a good job at handling these situations and knocking them out timely. So we'll see, man. There's really not a lot to say. It is what it is, you know.
One thing I will say is that I do appreciate the way they go about it. Now, from my previous experience, I know a lot of the time people like game-breaking bugs like this, they'll shut down the entire game until they get the bug fixed. It is nice that they can just turn off trading and the trading posts and player wealth and stuff to kind of nix this, in the butt. But here's one of the things I will say that's kind of frustrating as a player is I'm not sure, or at least they're not publicly making any of the player base aware of the bans or the rewinds or resets of these duping incidents. You know what I mean? A lot of players feel like that when things like this happen, it's giving other players who are willing to exploit the game or break the rules of the game or the TOS an advantage over them. And that's not a great feeling, you know? So I would like to see them be a little bit more public on what their actions have been, because it is frustrating as a player who, you know, is playing the game correctly and using the correct means to obtain wealth. Then, and you see someone else out here that just like, you know, dupes a trade 50,000 times. They get ahead of you in that way. It's a little bit frustrating, man. So I hope they can be a little bit more transparent with their actions or, you know, maybe even be a little bit more aggressive to the people that are willing to use these bugs.
Yeah, man, I think those things should be a permaban without a doubt. I mean, whenever you're in there duping, I mean, unless it's like this unintentional thing that you accidentally do it and you report it right away or something like that. But if you're in there intentionally duping, and there's a way to tell if people are intentionally duping or not. You're in there intentionally duping, man, you should be banned 100%, and it should be a permaban. You should never be allowed to play the game again. You know, you should have to buy a new account, and then even then get permabanned. Like, there should be no grace period. There should be no warning. It should just be you duped, you're banned, and you're perma banned at that. And maybe that is how they're doing it, and we just don't know. I know there has been bans coming down. There have been actions taken. To what extent? I don't know.
Yeah, and again, I think, you know, to make an example out of those people is key, because it does show you're willing to do this. Well, your IP is, I don't know if they can IP ban with the client with Steam and everything, but surely they can do something close to that. Yeah. You're not for playing the game again. And we'll see. I think obviously, like you said, I don't think this is the last we're going to see of some sort of duping exploit. So we'll see how they address it in the future. PTR, Bordy, big thing that happened this week. We got a public test realm. And not only that, but we got to see a lot of new content. So we're going to go through this briefly. We've already made a video. We'll try to link that in the show notes for you guys. Of all the things that are available or to experience, and all the changes that they made in the PTR, but first and foremost, of course, is the Void Gauntlet. We all knew it was coming, and here it is. It's here on the PTR, soon to be live client. We all think. So Bordy, me and you had a chance to play around and duel and do a bunch of things with the Void Gauntlet. What's your overall impression of the new weapon?
I think it's an interesting weapon, to say the least, man. There's a lot of interesting uses for it, I think. Obviously, it's very much geared towards a group build weapon. It's not really made specifically for dueling or small-scale stuff. It's going to be pretty good in group settings, I think. And overall, I think it's a neat weapon. There's some neat utility on it. It's very interesting, some of the abilities work. Some of them are a little bit weird. But overall, I think it's a cool weapon, and I think it could shake up the meta a little bit. So we'll just have to see how it plays out, man. At the end of the day, the Void Gauntlet is really not my cup of tea. I'm not really a mage player. I know this probably falls much more into your realm than mine. I played around with it quite a lot. It's a neat weapon, man. There's some neat abilities, but why don't you speak on it a little bit, Red? Because this is like right up your alley here.
Well, I love warlocks, necromancers, and all things like dark magic. I do think that the intentions of this weapon is to fulfill some sort of, I guess, fantasy in that nature. One of the things I will say, which is interesting about the weapon, is that, you know, it is scaling off of intellect primarily. So it's a classic split. I believe it's 90% intellect and 65% focus. It does appear like the main intention of the weapon, or the main use of the weapon, will probably be on the back bar of a life staff. And we all kind of thought that that would be the case. One of the things that I guess was relieved when I got to test the weapon is that it doesn't feel OP, right? It doesn't feel like it's overpowered on the back bar of a healer. I think the meta is yet to be shaken out, because I think a lot of people are just playing the Void Gauntlet now, so, or in the PTR anyway. So it'll be interesting to test that against some current meta build. But we both know that they're making some massive changes to everything the way it is right now. So, you know, who knows where it'll end up in the power escalon. But overall, I think the weapon has a lot of utility. It has a lot of, a lot of things you would look for, like in a mage weapon. It is very comparable to the Ice Gauntlet in a way. So it'll be interesting. Me and you, we played a lot of we dueled a lot, and I played a lot of Ice Gauntlet, Void Gauntlet builds, and they're a ton of fun. A lot of CC. You can really get away with, not having the Fire Staff and the mobility from that or whatever. So it'll be cool, man. I'm glad there's another weapon. I would, in the future, kind of like to maybe see them added more than one at a time, just for the sake of, I think, for the next week or two, once the patch hits live. I think we're just going to see a bunch of Void Gauntlet builds, but we'll see. We shall see.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't know how in-depth we want to go talking about the Void Gauntlet on the podcast. I think there's a ton of videos out there already, and I think that you've done one as well, right? Didn't you go into a little bit of depth with the Void Gauntlet abilities in that video?
We have done it in the past because, I mean, all the abilities that we had talked about in our data mined video are still hold true. But, You know, I can definitely once the Void Gauntlet post patch or post PTR, I think it'd be a good time to like review it as far as how it fits into the meta. Arcana changes were also done. These are big. Hyssop was a useless item, and so now they're adding this into the way Arcana works and how you'll craft potions now, Morty.
Yeah, pretty interesting change, I think, and overall maybe a good change because Hyssop was useless, and so it's nice to see all of the items that aren't being used being incorporated somehow. I know this is going to kind of trigger some people because it's an extra step to Arcana, so every potion that you craft now, you're going to have Hyssop for. All of the other ones, I think all of the other items in the Arcana tree basically are unchanged. I know they are addressing an issue where some of the items that you can't hit gear score 600 with some of the items in Arcana. I know they're addressing that as well. I don't know if that's going to be included in this next patch. I think it potentially is. So there's some changes coming there. Along with the Arcana changes, there's a lot of changes to other crafting too. I think we'll get into the stone cutting specifically in a minute, but they did increase the difficulty, or they are increasing the difficulty on the PTR at which crafting takes place. And by difficulty, I mean just increasing the amount of experience it required to level that craft up to 200. So if you guys are listening to this before the patch hits and you're grinding away at some crafting, you may want to go ahead and get it to 200 before the patches, because a lot of the crafting is going to be a little bit harder. I don't think they're touching like furnishing, for example, because it's already pretty difficult, but there's some other ones that they are definitely increasing the amount of experience required. So just a quick tip there, man. Get your crafting in while you can.
And I'm not so sure about this change, man, because here's the thing, is a lot of people have already grinded these out, and they've had the overall experience. And don't get me wrong, dude. I think it takes a long time to level up these crafting professions. But one of the things, I guess, to consider is that eventually a lot of these items will be available for purchase on the auction house. So you'll just be able to literally just go over, buy enough to get to 200 and get there. Because I think we all leveled in a drastically different landscape of economy and stuff like that. But I mean, here's the thing, dude, furnishing is a pain in the rear end to level. So if all the crafts are like this, then newer players are going to have even, an even harder time of getting these crafts up. We'll see what that looks like. See how, what the player feedback is on that as well. We have new enemy types, the Vangarian Raiders. I think the most important thing to note here, Bordy, is this is a brand new enemy type. So this adds to the number of family of enemies in Aeternum. So that overall, I think a very positive thing.
Yeah, pretty cool. They are only like level 16 to 20 or something like that, though. But they are pretty neat, man. They're running around with these shields and these one-handed maces, which is pretty cool. Their tents look really dope. Like, they've kind of washed up on the shores of Aeternum. Their boat crashed there, and they have these tents set up with kind of these spikes coming out of the ground where they've created this wall. It looks really, really cool, the areas that they have so far, and I'm excited to see how this transitions. And here's a little bit of a spoiler, I guess. In the quest line, it does say that you will be seeing more of these in the future, so I would imagine at some point we'll get some higher-level variants and a lot more variants of this type of enemy. So it's kind of neat, man. A completely new enemy introduced into the world of Aeternum. So we'll see how that shakes out, man. I think it's neat, though. That's one of the big criticisms, is the lack of variety of PvE mobs. And so this kind of addresses that.
Yes. And I think we both assume that this is kind of like their way of introducing this new mob type by like landing them on the shores of Aeternum. And in future patches, we'll kind of see them navigate throughout the middle of, and maybe even towards the north of Aeternum. And maybe we'll get to see some higher level, versions of these Vangarian Raiders too, which maybe, we'll get to see some unique gear drop from them and stuff. It's going to be interesting to see how they add, this is their first enemy type that they've added. So we'll see how they progress to adding them throughout the world. Yeah. Stone cutting.
They did, although they did add some other enemies too. That's like variants of the other of the enemies that's in there now, and they are completely different. I ran into a few of them on the PTR. Like some ancient mages were really, really cool. They had completely different like move sets. They looked completely different. They were shooting out some kind of void magic. They were cool. So there are some. They are adding variants as well to the mob types that are out there already. Just wanted to throw that in as well because I did see them playing on the PTR and they are pretty neat.
Very true. Very true. So you'll have to look for those when the new patch goes live. Stone cutting, big changes. We're just basically, I guess, the big changes are to the tuning orbs. They're having a reduction of the corrupted material that's used to craft those, which therefore should make these a little bit more accessible. I'm not sure, like, on a grand on the grand scheme of things, how much it'll change the overall availability. Man. I know you don't like tuning orbs in general, but
no, I don't. That's what I was about to say. I wish they would just get rid of them, man. This system to me is just bunk, bro. I don't know why it's even in the game. Like I have a hard time wrapping my mind around why they're gated like this. I don't know what the end goal is or what the end like. I'm not sure why these are a thing, man. I've tried to rack my brain, trying to figure out like why dungeons would be gated in this manner, and I don't know why. The only valid reasoning I can come up with is that stone cutting wasn't utilized very much until they added these in, because in stone cutting you used it for, I think, for some furnishing stuff or whatever previous to them adding tuning orbs. So there wasn't like a huge need for stone cutting. So it's almost like they were like, oh, we can just use stone cutting and add in these tuning orbs, and now here you go, now stone cutting is going to be super important. I'm just not a fan of them, man. I don't know why I don't know why they're in the game, man. It's not a fun mechanic to me, and I wish they weren't in there. What do you think about tuning orbs in general? Do you like them? Like, what's the purpose? Am I missing something here?
Well, okay, I think it's cool to have some sort of like requirement to get into these dungeons. I think the main problem is typically you see systems like this in in-game content. The mythic keys are one of the things I can think of from World of Warcraft. You need a certain level of mythic key to enter a higher level dungeon. Now, we're going to talk a little bit about this later. I think they have plans to instigate or put into the game a system that you can mutate these expeditions to be higher level to drop higher level gear. In that situation, I do think it's kind of cool to have a key to get into those so you can't just farm them.
I would agree.
But I think at that point, what's the word I'm looking for? My gosh, once they put them in the game,
implement.
There we go. Once they implement these changes into the game, I'd hopefully consider changing just using the tuning orbs for the mutated versions of them, and then letting the people like run them as they level up without the tuning orbs, because it is ridiculous to think that some player base is going to stop at level 25 to level the stone crafting to a certain level to be able to craft these to run the dungeon. Maybe they don't want people spamming them, but I mean, here's the thing is like, I think New World shines in a way that lets a lot of people level exactly the way they want, whether it's trading or crafting or whatever, but let people run dungeons if they want to run dungeons. Like I don't see, I don't see that there's a problem if someone wants to play the game that way. Especially leveling, and we talked about Outpost Rush making that available for lower levels too. I don't, let people do this if they want to do this early game, because it does add to the amount of, the amount of content available at those levels.
Yeah, it does for sure. I mean, you do get some free orbs to run Amrine, et cetera, but there, and all the other dungeons, I guess, you get some free tuning orbs. But once you get the end game, man, to go run like Garden of Genesis or Lazarus or something like that, it's just a chore to go get these things. And they make no sense. I can't wrap my mind around why we need them in the game to begin with. I've never been a fan of the system, and hopefully at some point in the future, that system will change. But at least they did on the PTR make it easier to craft these orbs, which I guess was the whole point in this. Sorry, I got off on a little bit of a tangent there. But at least they are easier to obtain because they don't require as many materials to craft them. So that is a step in the right direction, I guess.
Yes. And I understand. Like, I think the idea is like find someone with a tuning orb and help them run it, but I'm not sure it works as well as they maybe intended.
Nope. I just don't understand the premise.
Into the microphone. I probably won't edit that out. Sorry, guys. PvP missions are here. There's new ones. in fact. And I think that the direction that they're taking these, Bordy, is good. Just centering them, their objectives around PvP type stuff, like killing other players or taking a fort. Yeah. They're no longer, you're going to have to track down seven pigs that don't exist, which is, in my mind, a very positive change. What do you think about the new PvP missions here, Bordy?
Very, very good, man. Very good. Because before going and tracking down the pigs, the tigers, or whatever, didn't make sense. Now they're basically replacing those poaching missions with player killing missions. So now instead of going to kill PvE mobs, you're actually going to get rewarded whenever you go kill other people. The only problem that I see with this potentially is that it may take a little bit longer to do the PvP missions because now you have to capture the fort, which I have not ran any of these on the PTR yet. It's something that I have yet to do. I would like to run some of these just to test them out, but I do know like going to capture the fort is going to be a little bit more time consuming. The forts are usually a little bit further away from the settlement, so you got to run over there, and then just capturing the fort in general is a little bit longer. But what I'm hoping happens is this causes more conflict, and I'm assuming that's why they're implementing these anyway, is that it causes more conflict whenever you're trying to undermine the territory, because right now you can literally go undermine territories and never have any kind of pushback at all. And I think that probably that's still going to happen, obviously, because people can't be on at all times of the day whenever somebody's making a push on their territory or whatever. But at least now this kind of forces a little bit more PvP within those missions than it did before, which I think is very positive.
Yes, for sure. Maybe it is a good thing to kind of make these a little bit longer. I mean, they could always add XP maybe to them too, or like, you know, influence,
increase
as well.
The amount. Yeah.
Influence, yeah. Too. But yeah, overall, I think the changes are good. And finally, the universal trading posts are here. Now, of course, trading post is disabled right now. But in this, the PTR version, all of them are links. And now it's going to be, or make it more viable for people to own these territories, Bordy, which overall, yeah, I think is a great change.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree, man.
All right, great. Moving on to the data.
I think we've talked about talked about the universal trading post before, so I think I've already given all of my information there. I didn't want to go into depth.
It was great. It was a great opinion. Yeah. If you guys want to know it, look back to the other.
So my opinion has changed slightly on the universal trading post front. Okay, because before I was very, very torn. Now I do think the universal trading post is going to fit into the game much better than before. After thinking about it a lot, I was very torn on the idea, but with the way the game works, I think overall, for the overall health of the game, the universal trading post is going to be a very good change. Mm-hmm. And I think it's a good change moving forward. Before, I was like, man, this is cutting out the traders who want to play the trading game, moving from territory to territory. I don't think that was working very well anyway.
No, not at all.
So I think, right, I don't think it was working as we had initially envisioned that system to work. So now with the universal trading post, I think it's just going to open things up for everyone. It's going to be a lot more convenient. I think people are going to like it a lot more. I think it's going to be great. Now they need to do something with the storages as well, but that's a whole other conversation. I've got plenty of ideas there at some point maybe we can talk about, but that's for another day, Red. All right. Sorry, man. Right. So there you go. There's my adjusted stance on the universal trading post.
There it is. And I agree. I think it's going to be good overall. Data mined items. Now, we had some requests to talk about this. We've talked about these at nauseam, I think, in previous episodes and even previous videos. But here's the thing. Here's the gist. They have teased that, or they have leaked a bunch of information. You can find that in our previous videos. New weapons, of course. None of this is confirmed, so we're not going to go into detail. But new weapons, the new zone, of course, Brimstone Sands that we all know we're going to get. We just don't know when. Dungeon mutations. We talked a little bit about those earlier. They're just basically a new way to present the dungeons that are currently in the game. Lots of new skins, of course. We all know those are coming. And then a winter event that they did show some unique items things in them that kind of show that this might be an actual event, Bordy. This isn't just going to be shop items. This seems there's going to be some sort of activity involved.
Yeah. I think the winter event's going to be cool, man. Now, there was speculated we were going to have an October event, and we didn't have that either. Right. So I don't know. I wouldn't hold your breath for a winter event, but I would like to see one before the end of the year. It would be nice to have some sort of event, specifically around like the winter holidays, like Christmas and New Year's and all that stuff. It would be awesome. And I would love to see the settlements and stuff changed and decorated accordingly and whatever. I really enjoy that in games. I think we've talked about that before, too, whenever we're talking about the October event. But hopefully we'll get one, man. It's out there, data mined, and so hopefully we see that come to fruition.
Yes. I think we're all looking forward to see what New World has to offer as far as holiday events go, because I think it's a big part of MMO culture, at least in 2021. So we'll see what New World does. I'm excited. I hope it's this year that they put it in there. All right, man. So let's wrap a nice bow on the news and head over to our main topic, which will be the most recent dev vlog. I meant blog. All right. So tons of new information here, Bordy, in the dev vlog. A lot of communication here from the New World team, like probably way more than they ever needed to or anybody thought that they would do. But it's here, and we're going to go try to glance through a lot of this here in this episode for you guys. Maybe a quick little bow on the top so you guys don't have to go read this entire patch, but if you want to, we'll link it in the notes as well. Man, I made a lot of promises about links. Hopefully remember to get those in there. Real quick, guys. So they basically took to the forums and posted a question or answers, excuse me, on a lot of questions that players had, and some pending, I think, concerns from players as well. So, Bordy, we're going to start right with server transfers. So tell us a little bit about what the devs said about server transfers up until this point.
Yeah, so apparently a lot of people were able to transfer servers without any issue, or most everyone were able to transfer servers without any issue. But there was like a certain, a small demographic of players who they weren't able to use their transfer token because there were these like ghost contracts out there on the trading post. So they're having to like go out and manually investigate these and then take action to correct those. So it says that they are trying to get these corrected, and they're working on those ghost contracts to get all of that stuff resolved. And then they acknowledge that the first round of server transfers provided a lot of lessons for them to learn from. And then they apologize for the inconvenience that people have experienced. And then they said the estimated timing to have all of the server transfer stuff wrapped up and completely corrected is before the end of the year. So, which is to be expected, man. All of these things are growing pains. I don't know that these things are like the server transfer thing sucks. I don't know that it's a humongous issue. I mean, it's something they need to get sorted, but they're working on those things, man. You know, and it seems like most players were able to transfer without any issues, and it's just like this very small demographic of players. So if you're in that demographic, that kind of sucks for you guys, but just know they are working on them for sure. One thing I'd like to point out, Red, before we move any further, though, is that I have seen on the forums over and over and over, and on Reddit over and over and over, the lack of transparency and communication from the developers to us, the players. Dude, I don't know what more people want in terms of communication from the developers. Like, I don't understand people's like demands. And maybe some of our listeners can like help clarify what maybe some people are wanting, but this blog post right here, and maybe people just don't know where to go to find this stuff, because this is in a section in the forums called Developer Corner that probably not a lot of people look at, would be my guess. But dude, this is probably some of the most transparent, like well thought out responses that I've ever seen from any game ever. Like, this is crazy, the amount of information and time and effort they put into crafting and drafting this post, man. I guarantee you this was not a 10-minute post that they put together. This post probably took 10 hours at least, and probably more to put together. This thing is crazy long, crazy in-depth. It gives us tons of information, and it's super transparent. So if you guys don't go check the Developer Corner, and you're one of those people that are wondering why we're not getting communication, well, we're, in my opinion, we're getting like above and beyond the amount of communication. So just a sidebar and a side note there, like, go check out the Developer Corner, because it's crazy. And if you still want more communication after that, then I don't know. I don't know that anybody's ever going to be able to please you, to be honest. You know, like, I don't.
You're unpleasable.
I think you're just complaining to be complaining at that point, because there is plenty of communication on literally every topic out there right now. So Anyway, that's the news about server transfers. Just wanted to throw that little tidbit out there too, though.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think true. The only thing that maybe, like you said, is a concern is that they kind of separate these things a little bit. Some things go up on the website. Some patch notes go on the website. Some of it lands in the forums, and I can see the maybe if you're only checking the website, you think, man, the communication kind of sucks. But they need to figure that out, right, in the future to help, because their goal is to appear or be transparent with the player base. So
and they are. Right. Yeah, they are. And I think that probably is the problem, right? Like people that are going to check just the website, they're like, well, crap, they're not telling us anything that's going on with the game. When in fact, they are literally telling you every detail about what's going on with the game, down to how here in a minute, we'll talk about how luck works. They went through this incredibly in-depth post about how Watermark works. I mean, everything that players are having questions about, they post out here, and it is just maybe the location in which they post it is where the confusion comes in, I guess.
Yeah, I would think that was probably the main concern or the main issue here, because it's definitely not transparency, because they're definitely being transparent. Region transfers here, Bordy, cross region things. This kind of falls into the server transfers here. Anything good in that section that you think we should share?
They're just talking about like the interest in cross-region transfers. I don't know that they have the cross-region transfers in place. They say that this feature is in development. So if you do want to transfer from like, they use the example of EU Central to EU East, same would apply from like NA East to NA West, et cetera, et cetera. They don't have that feature in place now, but they're trying to gauge interest to see if that's something people will be interested in. And if it is, then they're going to maybe think about implementing that in the future. So right now you can't transfer cross-region like that, but maybe in the future it'll be possible.
Have never personally played a game that allowed you to region transfer. You always have to re-level. Yeah. So we'll see what goes there. I don't know if they want to waste their time on doing something like that, but we'll see. I guess it's all about player interest. Server merges. These are a big deal, Bordy. I think we all know that these are in the horizon. We don't know how far off it is going to be, but they gave a lot of details about server merges.
Yeah, dude, server merges are a thing that needs to happen. I think everybody can agree on that for sure. It needs to happen fairly soon. And lucky for us, I think it's going to happen fairly soon, man. Mm-hmm. They're testing that on the PTR actually today. As of the recording of this, they have been tested. I think they actually tested it some over the weekend too. I've seen some posts on Reddit, but I haven't been in the PTR in a day or two to check it out. I'll probably get on there today to check out this server merge stuff. But they're testing the server merges out there right now, and they are in a nutshell, this is how server merges are going to work, right? Because this is what everyone wants to know. Server merges will probably happen very soon. I don't know exactly the date. They don't list a date here, but they are working on it. It's going to happen soon. But here's the meat and potatoes of this thing, right? This is what's going to happen whenever you merge, okay? So I'm just going to go ahead and read this to you rather than just explain it. So it says, players on worlds identified for merge will be informed in advance of the plan. And you are going to be merging into your world set, right? Just like transfers work, you're not going to be merged with some, like NA East is not going to merge with NA West or whatever. You're going to be merged within your own world set. So it says, players on worlds identified for merge will be informed in advance of the plan. Players with characters on a merge candidate world will not lose their progress, including gold, items, faction, and company. However, territories will belong to the companies on the partner world. So for example, if world X is confirmed as a merge candidate and world Y is identified as the partner world, players on world Y are not impacted other than an influx of players on the world. World Y's territory ownership persists after the merge. However, the companies that companies are compensated 50K gold, which is 3.3 times the cost of war for loss of territory ownership due to a world merge. So if you are on a server and you own territory and your server is merged into another territory, into another server, you will no longer own territory, but you are going to get compensated by 50K gold for each territory that you own, right? And then it also says, World X characters are relocated to World Y, and characters, companies, housing, gold, and owned items remain intact, but your territory ownership does not persist on the new world. So that's how it's going to work. And I don't know, Red, how else they could do it. You know, I don't know a better way than what they're doing. They're trying to compensate people that lose territory. I don't know that you can do it any other way, man. I don't think you would want to just wipe the server clean. And that's going to make people mad. This way is going to make people mad. We've talked about server merges before. Any way you slice it, you're going to make someone mad, someone upset. At least they're giving you 50K gold for being merged. It does suck that you lose your territory. But it is what it is, man. You know, if for the long term, it's better to merge these servers and move on. But well, anyway, that's how it's going to work.
Like you said, I think the other way makes two sets of people mad, and in this way only makes one set of people mad. And it is typically the smaller group, because I think if you're getting merged into another server, the other server is bigger for the most part. One of the things that I will note is it's going to be impossible, I think, to fully compensate a company.
It will be.
I think they should just look at the 100K coin mark personally, because that's what most people would have paid to get the territory if it was brand new. And then I think that's, I don't know. I think that number is, I mean, what's the real difference between 50K and 100K when it comes to this sort of thing? So I think it'd be fine to go ahead and compensate them for the full amount. But overall, I think that, you know, like you said, I think these are in the horizon. I think they have to come, because a lot of the smaller servers are dying. And then, you know, if someone uses their server transfer token and then that server dies, then they're, you know, in trouble. Like, is this the gaming... Is this the free gaming experience that they would want to, you know, provide for their players? Is to have, like, you know, oh, well, unless you pay $15 or whatever they're going to charge for a transfer token, then you basically are playing a dead game. Like, I think they definitely, you know, needed to merge these servers. And I think they might potentially need to look at maybe providing another transfer token for free in the future once all these server merges are complete.
Yeah, I think that'd be nice.
War can't declare war issue. Now, this is just they just let us know that they understand that this is an issue. They're going to try to fix it. Not a lot here, right, Bordy?
Yeah, we suffered from this on our server, where we had a lot of people going to declare war or trying to undermine a territory, and we would most definitely contribute over 10% of the influence, and then we would never be selected for the Vanguard, or we couldn't even have the opportunity to declare war on that territory because it said we didn't meet the 10% threshold. So there was a bug there. They're addressing it. They're fixing it. So moving forward, war can't be declared issue should be fixed, which thank goodness, man, because that was getting very frustrating for us as a company, I know for sure.
Yeah, I think a lot of people shared that frustration. It felt like we were doing a ton of work and not getting any acknowledgement for the bid. And I do think maybe potentially, I understand that they want everybody to have an opportunity to win a territory, but I would like to see the way that they weight your influence or the amount of influence you provide a little bit differently, because it feels like sometimes we're the only company running, you know, quests, but somehow other people, you know, get an equal chance at ownership. So, which I think maybe I understand they're trying to prevent, like they're trying to provide a feels good moment, but for the people that actually do the work, it actually kind of feels bad to do all that work and still have someone who did a lot less work have an equal chance to get the bid. So. We'll see. Luck. Now, luck is a big question or concern over a lot of players. It is kind of an abstract variable that a lot of people are trying to figure out. So what did they tell us about luck in the dev blog?
Well, there's quite a lot here, so I'm not going to go over all of it. I'm just going to go over a couple points here. So it says that luck is interpreted in two ways. There's like an overall scale that you can think of as a ratio when things occur or as a percentage of chance to occur. Then they also have another scale, and this one relates more to like gathering and fishing, et cetera. It's a relative scale that has a movable odds range based on other values that they add to it. So a couple of the big takeaways here is that luck does not increase your chance to get higher gear score rolls or roll more perks on a particular item, but it does increase your chances of seeing item drops that have higher chances of rolling bonuses. So luck also does not increase your chance of getting a higher gear score or watermarked items, which is how we thought that worked all along, and they just kind of confirmed that as well. So it does increase the chance of you getting better items, basically. It does not increase your chance of getting more items, does not increase your chance of having a higher watermark. It just increases your chance of getting like rarer items within that particular roll. Right. And then the way it works for like for fishing, et cetera, is it's on a range. So They use an example here. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but it's kind of interesting how it works. And I think if you have any confusion about how luck works, you should definitely go read this post because it does explain some things. They don't go into depth with their numbers or exactly how it works. They do give some good overview, though, to give you a better understanding of how the system works. So I highly recommend going to read that. It's kind of a lot, so I don't really want to just harp on it a lot or try to explain that in this form on the podcast here.
Yeah, and I think maybe... Here's the thing that I've noticed within New World that maybe is a little bit of an issue. There seems to be multiple tooltips for different or multiple tooltips for the same thing. So rather than, you know, again, providing a number for luck and then a percentage of a chance to drop a greater item, maybe just put the percentage on the gear. Like, hey, you have now this particular piece of item has gives you a 1% chance to drop higher, you know what I mean, a higher rarity of item. Same goes with crafting and gathering. They use multiple perks on multiple pieces of gear, and I know that they, you know, that may be necessary to change the wording depending if it's jewelry or gear or the pickaxe or whatever, but I would like to see just that number, that percentage of increase up communicated on the item. I think it definitely reduced a lot of the confusion that's had by the player base right now.
It would be nice, but it's weird because they also say here in this post, they say, additionally, we don't use percentages in our data notation. We use integer-based roll ranges to apply probability weights to the chances of a specific thing dropping. So I don't know that they could do that. I think the way they have the system set up is a little bit weird, a little bit odd. It would be nice if it was just like, hey, here you go. Here's an extra, you know, 5% chance to it increases your chance to find these rare items by 5% or something like that, which it does kind of work that way, but not exactly. So it's kind of a abstract system. But anyway, I think after you read the post or after anyone goes out there and reads the post, you'll be a lot more informed on it and you'll kind of understand it a little bit better. And I think it's a good read. So yeah, I'd highly recommend going to check it out.
Yeah, for sure. The next topic we have is incentivizing players to join a less dominant faction. Now, this is a little bit challenging, I think, Bordy, is because there's already a limitation to even change factions to begin with. So tell us about what their stance or what their opinion is on the current system in place to join a less dominant faction.
Yeah, so right, that is an issue, right? That is an issue. That's an issue that I know you and I have been concerned about since day one of this game, and I think it is an issue that's cropping up on some servers as well. So it's nice to know that they do have things in place and ideas in place to mitigate this. So they do have a way right now to give the underdog factions extra influence to give them a better chance at earning the right to declare war. And then they do not allow players to switch factions to the dominant faction. But it does say, here's a pretty interesting note here, is that they say very soon they're going to reduce the time between switching factions from 120 days to 60 days. So instead of they're cutting that in half, man. So you'll now be able to switch factions every 60 days, which should help move some people to underdog factions, which I don't know how I feel about that one, but I don't know, man. Maybe there's better ways to incentivize that. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know that'll even cause any issues anyway. We'll just have to wait and see how that works out. But then it says they are also actively discussing ways to incentivize players to join less dominant factions, but they don't have a plan, and they have a couple of options. And they talk about gameplay buffs to underdog factions or more targeted incentive groups within the dominant faction to switch over for rewards if they successfully capture territories. And I've always thought that giving buffs to the faction, like the underdog faction, is potentially a way to go with this ordeal. Like if you just really see that your syndicate faction has half the numbers as the Covenant and the Marauder faction, and you're just overwhelmed, giving a buff there may be a way to go. Now that gets a little tricky gets a little tricky to balance as well, but that I think that is an idea in a way they could go for sure. And I think I'm okay with that. It just depends on how they would implement the buff to the faction that's getting worked over on the server. So we'll just have to wait and see how that goes. That's not something that's currently in the game, but they are discussing that aspect of it. So we'll see.
For sure. I think it is something that needs to be constantly looked at because it is a problem with these three faction games almost perpetually. Yeah. Like there's always a less dominant faction that, you know, some people like to be the underdog, but I think most people are bandwagoners, so to say, and they want to just be on the dominant faction for less resistance. So we shall see. The next one was about exploits, Bordy. This is a yeah. We just talked about this a little bit ago. What did they say on exploits in New World?
Well, yeah, so this is an interesting one too, because a lot of people are a little bit in the gray area when it comes to abusing exploits, because some people don't know what is considered an exploit and what is not, because there's a lot of bugs in the game and a lot of things in the game you can do that is most definitely a gray area. So this kind of explains a lot of that. So I would recommend going to read this section as well, because you could get banned for something that you're doing that you don't know is an exploit. So you need to come read this for sure. But it says a bug becomes an exploit when a player uses it intentionally, repeatedly, or both to obtain an advantage over normal game behavior. So here's a pretty good example right here, right? So an example might be a spawn bug. Let's say there's a particular creature that only spawns once an hour. A player stumbles upon a sequence of actions that cause the creature to spawn instantly. The first time this happens, it's a bug. But if the player starts going through the sequence many times to spawn the creature and kill it for loot, then it's an exploit. And then using the bug to gain faster loot and access than a player regularly would. So that is definitely an exploit right there, right? Which here's the thing, man. I have been confused about this stuff too. I'll be the first to admit it. There are places in the world where you can go and you can get outside of the territory range of a mob and then it spawns a little bit faster. Dude, I've done it, and not intentionally. I didn't know that was considered an exploit for this reason. I'm not going to do that anymore moving forward, because it's pretty clear right here that you're not supposed to do that, and then that's considered an exploit. So I'm not going to do that anymore, which I don't know that it's worth doing it anyway. It was kind of a watermark grind. Now, there are people out there abusing things like dungeon mechanics and other things that are very clearly an exploit that people should know better, right? Like, so... There are those gray lines of players that you don't know what is and what isn't. So it's kind of nice to see them address this. But then it says, how do they penalize players in deliberately utilizing exploits to win wars or farm gear? So it says that their usual course of action is to suspend players temporarily first, and then switch to banning if the behavior repeats. So here's the thing, man. I don't know in which manner. Like, there are certain instances where I think there should just be an insta perma ban, right? And I don't know if that's like duping, etc. To me, those should be an insta perma ban. Those people need to be gone. That is for sure an exploit that people know they are utilizing. Some of these other things, like triggering the boss to spawn quickly, a lot of people may not know. Like, they're just using that. They're like, oh, this is a game mechanic. Like, I figured out something that I can use to my advantage, right? So I can understand there, like, we're going to suspend you for a day or two, and then if you do it after that, then we're going to ban you. Like, I understand that, but I don't know where they stand with the other side. Now, they do say both the issues are separate from the use of third-party software to gain an advantage in game. That is not a bug, and a player who is doing this should expect to be fully banned as it against the TOS. So there is something, but it doesn't really, I don't know that it mentions anything about like duping or anything like that in here, which in my opinion should be an insta ban no matter what.
Yeah, 100%. Anytime, I think the difference between those two bans are, one of them is like, it seems like the game is messed up. So like, you can't blame a character or a player from, like, you know, say a boss spawn rate is too fast, right? Them using that fast spawn rate for their advantage is kind of hard to, like, yes, you can ban them for a day or two, but permabanning someone based off of that would be challenging. Now, manipulating something that is an exploit multiple times, like duping an item or like you were saying, triggering a boss to respawn in like an unintended manner, like, you know, doing something that would exploit the boss spawn, are I think more bannable offenses, because you know what you're doing is against TOS. You know what you're doing is getting a massive advantage over other players. I think that those type of people definitely have an intention in place, and I think should be up for a perma ban at that point, because, you know, if they're willing to do that, I think most likely the behavior is going to repeat itself. Like, you know, when the next exploit comes up, I think they're going to be willing to do that too. But you know, it's hard to tell. I don't blame them for, like, you know, kind of taking it on a case-by-case basis. But some of the people, I think for sure, with the duping, which should be permaban. Quest and quest design here, Bordy. Now, this is an interesting topic, and I think a lot of people's concern in MMOs in general is the repetitiveness of quests and what the use of quests are in the game. So tell us a little bit about their stance on questing.
Yeah, so I think they're just trying to make it better. That's basically the gist of this post, is they're trying to make it better. Now, a couple of like of the bigger things to note here is like major enemies in the main story quest series adjusted to more appropriate difficulty. Like example, the Well Guardian, bro. That's a very big change that I think it will be very welcome to a lot of people. Like nerfing the Well Guardian, it should have been done a long time ago. Like I don't know why it's even in the game like that, but now they recognize it. They're fixing it, and that's good. So a lot of the things are like some of the quests gating improvements to allow more optimized travel times, new and improved quests in higher level zones, the new storyline associated with the Varangian Knights. I don't know how to say that word. Is it Varangian? Varangian? I have no idea. Which will play out further in future releases. New presentation methods to highlight major story moments in the game. See, I like that aspect of it. So maybe they're going to incorporate some cinematics or something. It doesn't say that here, but just new presentation methods to highlight major story moments. Sounds like potentially maybe some cinematics or something like that. I don't know. But they're also adding like trade skill quests, which are cool. They're going to offer specific skill enhancing rewards, weapon mastery quests, which I think is really cool because grinding out weapon mastery right now, I'm in the process of trying to do that for all of my weapons. I'm almost there with all of them, but it would be nice to have some sort of quest to go through with the weapon mastery. That would be cool. New expeditions and features. They're saying that new expeditions and features are going to be released in coming months with new stories to accompany them, which is dope. So there you go. There's new expeditions are confirmed, and I would imagine we'll get those pretty soon. So just overall, the gist is that they're making the questing experience and quest design experience better, which is, I think, very welcome. I think some of these things are going to be really, really good. Really good implementations and additions to the game.
Absolutely. And one of the things I will say is, you know, although, you know, we kind of look at things at launch and the state of the game right now, I think a lot of these changes to questing are going to go a long ways the next time they put the game on discount or maybe introduce a massive patch or maybe even an expansion. Having these systems reworked and in place for new players to go through the game can go a long ways in player retention and everything like that. So I'm glad they're taking, even though a lot of people have progressed past the point of questing or, you know, are getting towards the end of questing, it's awesome to see they're still paying attention to detail for the overall yep. life of the game. So it's exciting to hear their changes. And I think most of them sound pretty good on paper. So representation of character and character customization design. Tell us a little bit about what they said about this.
They're just making it better, man. I mean, there's not a lot to say here, to be honest. They're just making it better. They want the character customization, the design of characters to be better, the aesthetics to be better. They're just basically saying they're trying to make it better. Their goal is for players to be able to create a character that they can relate to and that fits the personality they want their character to convey. Now, the only thing I would say is that if they do implement some new character like customization methods in the game, yeah, that they have to implement it not only on your character creation, but they have to add a way in for us people that aren't creating new characters to now adjust the looks of our character, right?
So your character needs a lot of work,
my character's great.
We need to find a way. I mean, I agree. Overall, like if they're making these changes, then I think we should look for like maybe a barbershop or something in game that allow people to change their skin, or maybe even, you know, something through the shop that allows you to change your appearance for free once and then maybe, you know, forever. I don't know. We'll see what they do, what their approach is. But overall, I would like to see them have an in-game feature to change your character after this point. Mini maps. This has been a common conversation among people. I don't know if this one clears up any questions, but tell us what they said about mini maps.
So the mini map. So basically, they said a mini map is allowed under these very, very, very specific requirements. So I'm going to go through these real quick for you guys. If you don't know, there is a mini map you can get. It's a third party tool that you can download. You can have it with your game. I'll give my thoughts on this here in just a minute. But for now, just know it says as a general rule, the mini map follows the exact rules of Compass and cannot give players an advantage of any type over the Compass. Information to be used for display, even with the limitations expressed below must come from the Overwolf API, which we may add over time but can't commit to at the moment. So it says the minimap can show player position. It can show people in group as they do on the compass. It can only show node placement if they've unlocked that node via trade skills, provided it's within the range that the compass would display them. Mm-hmm. It can only show AI that you've unlocked via trade skills as compass and within range of the compass. And it can only show quests as they do on the compass. So basically, your minimap can only show the things that you would otherwise see in game. It cannot show you every single node in the game. It cannot show you every single quest giver, et cetera, et cetera. It can't show you all of those things. It can only show you the things that the compass would show you if you've progressed down those gathering skills, et cetera, and have unlocked the capability to track those things. So, and then it says, at this time, we can confirm that we have not banned anyone for using the minimap mod from Overwolf, but in the future, they may change their position on this and decide to add a minimap or change their position on allowing Overwolf. So if they were to change, we would give plenty of notice along with designated grace period where they would not ban players for continued use. So here's the thing, man. Here's my stance on the minimap situation, right? Like, if they add a minimap, fine. Like, if they add a minimap, then that's fine, right? And I think if they ever do add a minimap, it'll be exactly what the restrictions they posted right here would be my guess.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, I hope, man, and this is going to probably be an unpopular opinion, but this is my opinion nonetheless. I hate add-ons in an MMO, bro. I hate them. I hope we don't get them ever because, for one, I hate the feeling of, dude, now I've got to go download some third-party software and install it on my PC so that now I can be competitive at this game. Because now I've got to have DPS meters. Now I've got to have this mini-map. Now I've got to have this add-on that shows where all these other things are. And this, dude, I hate that, man. I hope we never get that in the game because it takes away from the game experience to me. I know whenever I go into a new game, like, going into ESO, for example, and you see all these people with all these add-ons and whatever, as a new player, number one, it's very overwhelming and you feel behind if you don't have those things. Like, if you start the game and you don't have these add-ons, you already feel like you're at an immediate disadvantage, and then you have to go download them and figure out what you need to get and all this stuff dude, it's way too overwhelming, and it's almost like a gate to enter into the MMO that you have to learn all of that on top of learning the game just to be competitive. Like, dude, I hate them. I'm not a fan of third-party programs in an MMO, and I hope they maintain their stance there. And what I would like to see is that these things that players really, really want in the game, they just add them to the game themselves. They have them in the game so that whenever you install the game, you have everything there that you already need, and there's no desire or need to have third-party programs. I don't like them, man.
I agree with you because here's the thing is if the game needs it that badly to where like a majority of your player base is going to download an add-on, it should probably just go ahead and be in the game. Skyrim and a lot of games in the past have been improved by modders and people in the community that have put things in the game that in a third-party way that they just institute in the game. Now, I think the argument is that, well, how are we ever going to know that those things can be added to the game if someone doesn't create them and the player base gets to experience them? But the problem is what you said, is why in the world would you want your player base to feel like they need to go download something other than downloading the game itself to be able to experience the game and be competitive in the game? Like, it's just always been a bad design, in my opinion. Macros is another thing that really irritate me. And MMOs is like, I have to put together a computer program to be better at this game. Then why isn't the game just, you know, changed in a way that allows me to be good at the game without these things? I agree, dude. I don't like add-ons typically in MMOs. I do think they can be a divisive way to divide player base and everything like that. So I would like to see them either take a firm stance here. Say, like, we will put it in a mini-map if you guys want it, or we don't like the idea of a mini-map. We have the compass. We have something in place for you guys, and this is the way we want you to experience the game. And then no one even knows that the mini-map is useful because no one can have a mini-map. Like, it's just like, you know what I mean? Like, no one has a mini-map, so why can you... Are you going to say, like, I don't want to play New World because they don't have a mini-map? Like, that's kind of ridiculous in and of itself, but... I agree with you, dude. I don't like the idea of needing add-ons to perform in a game or to be competitive in a game. I think it's silly.
Yeah, for sure. They do have some really good points in here, and their explanation for why they did not have a mini map in the game on release, which I think are very valid points for sure.
Yeah, yeah.
And I like the fact that they went into their reasoning behind not having them in there, and I'll let you guys go read that for yourself. But at the end of the day, they just don't want to take away from the player experience from people just staring at a mini map all the time. That's basically the gist of it, and I agree with that for sure. So that's why they have the compass versus a mini map. And anyway, they go into a lot more detail. You guys can go check it out, but yeah, it's a pretty good read if you're interested in the minimap topic or discussion.
Yes, sir. Okay, well, next on the docket we have company concerns here, Bordy. Did kind of go through the gold cap and everything like that, so tell us a little bit about this section on the dev blog.
Well, this almost plays into the same thing, the same problem with the faction, one faction getting too powerful, right? It's almost like one company becomes too powerful, or they just have too many people, and that one company runs the server, right? So they're trying to put in some things to mitigate that for sure, like the 500K coin cap is one of those things, and some other things. So it says that in the future, this is the big part here that I like, that I hope they add in. And here's the thing, man. I don't know how you'll ever mitigate having that on a server, right? Like, I don't know how they'll ever mitigate that, man. How do you prevent like 500 people coming together and creating five companies and just completely dominating the server? Like, how do you prevent that? I don't know that you ever can.
I don't think you can.
Because
the way the game is designed right now, you can't. Yeah.
Right. I think at that point, it then boils down to your. It's not a company problem at that point. I think it's a faction problem at that point, which they've already addressed, because obviously all those companies are going to be on the same faction, and then that faction is going to run the server or whatever. So I think it becomes a faction problem more so than a company problem. But it does say here that in the future they're going to add in things like a company ledger, the ability to change company permissions, and some more like quality of life things for the company, which is very much needed for sure. So that's a good thing. That's a very big positive.
Yes. So now combat responsiveness. This is a thing that a lot of people have concerns about, weapon swapping and all of those other things. What did they come to terms with, or at least bring to light about the combat responsiveness in New World?
Well, I mean, here's the thing, man. The weapon swap is janky right now, right? Like, sometimes you pressure swap, it doesn't swap. So they're addressing that. They're going to try to make it more fluid, which is a good thing. That's a step in the right direction. That's a positive thing. The other thing they're looking at is the dodge cancel windows and the attack input during like the recovery of all of the attacks, because there's some inconsistencies happening amongst all of the weapons, etc. So they're just trying to streamline the fluidity of combat is basically what the gist of this is, which is much needed, because swapping weapons right now isn't great. There are times where it gets bugged out and you'll press the button, it doesn't swap a weapon, you're still on the wrong weapon, and then you're trying to use an ability, that ability's on cooldown and you can't use it because you think you're on the other weapon, and it just gets to be a poop show. So there does need to be a lot more responsiveness with the weapon swap, and I'm glad they're addressing that. I think overall it's okay, but there are some definite issues there. The whole like animation canceling situation, man, they're looking at dodge canceling specifically as one of the things they're looking at here. I don't know. Animation canceling in general, I'm not a big fan of. The dodge cancel in this game is whatever, because it's not that big of a deal. It's not that big of an animation cancel. Almost anybody, well, literally anybody can do it. Which I guess you can make the argument that anybody can do any canceling animation, but it really you can't, because it takes practice to really be good at animation canceling. And if you have to use that to be good at the game, I'm not a fan of that either. So I hope that they somehow address animation canceling and the dodge animation canceling and all that stuff. I don't know how they're going to do that. They say they're going to try to make it consistent across the board. I guess we'll see what happens there. But I don't want to get into an animation cancel like combat system, man. That's not fun for me, because then you just have to learn. Like, you just have to learn how to animation cancel. And it's like, well, that's not... I don't know, man. I'm not a fan
of
that either.
Well, they've already taken a stance against animation canceling. Back in the preview event, you could cancel the musket's reload animation, and they changed that completely to where you couldn't. I can't imagine them not keeping that stance moving forward, because, again, do you want the most optimal way to play your game to abuse the mechanics of the game? And I think I think the answer is probably no most of the time. And you can argue that, and we don't want to get into that conversation on this show. But I mean, it's true. You know, I think, you know, you're basically trying to cancel the animation that the game designers put in place to kind of prevent you from spamming abilities and to make it where you can get those abilities off faster than anybody else. So, I don't know how much, I mean, there is some skill involved in animation canceling, but I also think that it's a skill that, I don't know, do you, is that the, what you want the top players to talk about is like, I'm the best animation canceler. Versus,
right, and that's the problem. Like, I don't think that's an intended mechanic in your combat. Like, that's not what you want to practice to be good at combat in a game, in my opinion. You know, like, sure, everybody can go practice it, but is that really what's going to give you the edge? Is that you can cancel animations faster than the other guy? Like, that just I don't like that in a game. So I hope they don't go that direction, which I don't think they will.
I don't either. The next thing they change is weapon, or the next thing they talked about is weapon balance changes. Now, there's an entire list of changes here. I don't think we want to go through these on this particular episode. Maybe we can cover them in a different video, or maybe when the patch is actually live, we can go through them. But overall, Bordy, I think this is just basically some, they recognize that there's a lot of weapon balancing and changing that needs to happen in New World.
Yeah, and it's going to be an ongoing issue for the duration of the game eternity, man. That's just what happens in these games. People are going to get mad because things are getting nerfed. A lot of people are going to be happy because things are getting buffed. That's just going to be the ebbs and flows of the game. If you've ever played any MMO, this is what happens. It's just a balancing pass that happens all the time, and they may get it right. They may get it wrong. We'll see what happens with the patch. We'll see what's good, what's not good, and then we'll wait for another balance patch. And that's just how it goes.
Yes, sir. Last one's weapon and armor perks. Just they basically acknowledge that they know that some of these aren't working. They're going to get them working as soon as the November update. So we look forward to seeing that. And then the last bit was the public test realm, which we already covered earlier in the episode. Bordy, a lot of stuff to kind of digest and conversate about in this episode. We're interested to know what your guys' thoughts are. Let us know in the comments below what you guys think about all these changes. And again, I'm just very, very proud to be part of the New World community, because, you know, dude, the dev team is on their A game with these communication lines, and although they could work on, you know, where they put the information, I do think the information here was above and beyond what we could expect from the team.
Yeah, I would agree.
All right, Bordy, so let's hop right over to the companies of the week. You about talked, dude. I saw that. It looked like you were gonna start talking during that drop, dude.
The viewers
didn't see it, but I did. All right, Bordy. Why don't you go into the companies of the week?
Delusional, bro. I wasn't gonna say a word, man. Yo, before we get into the companies of the week, we're gonna plug our own company really fast, because we are shifting kind of in a new direction. So come check us out on Takamagahara, US East, The Revenant. If you're level 60 plus, we're kind of merging into one company right now, going a little bit more of the competitive route, not the super sweaty crazy route, but a little bit more competitive. So if you guys are level 60 plus and trying to get geared, trying to be a little bit competitive, and you're on NA East, come join us, man. Takamagahara. I think we have a few slots left. We don't have a ton of slots, but we do have a few. So if you guys are interested in that, go check out our Discord. But now, on to the actual companies of the week. Let's start with the Savage Trees, Red. So we have, they are region NA West. They are Marauders, and their focus is PvP. It says that they are a 21-plus community, but it says as long as you have common sense, things should be fine. So it looks like they're looking for a more mature.
That's hard to find nowadays. More mature audience.
It's very, very, very hard. Luckily for ours, we have a good group, but I bet these people do too. I bet the Savage Trees do too. It sounds like they are screening their people pretty well to have a mature audience. So if you're into that, go check them out. It says they seek to unite their faction once again, like they have done successfully in the beta. So team-oriented players are preferred, and we are the tide that washes away the sand. Yo, dude, what a tagline, bro. I kind of like that. Their company is the official PvP company of the Savage Trees gaming community. So go check them out. Their Discord link will be in their posting on newworldfans.com. We'll make sure to link that in the description below, everywhere this podcast can be found. The next company we have on the docket here is Ghost Legion. They are also an NA West company. Their faction is Syndicate. And dude, they have a dope banner, bro. They have a really cool banner.
Yeah, I'm going to show it on screen now, dude.
Yeah, yeah, dude. Well, it's it's
they'll
nice.
Have to just like bear with me for a second because the...
Yeah, well, I'll explain it to our listeners while you're waiting versus the people that are watching the YouTube video. So the listeners, it's a syndicate banner with a ghost icon on it, basically. It just looks really, really cool. But the Ghost Legion, it says that they are an inclusive PVX community of gamers that came together during closed beta. They're organized, competitive, and a knowledgeable group of gamers with previous MMO and Siege War experience. They plan on becoming in-game and war-focused settlement owners who help uplift their fellow faction members. So it says they plan to take Everfall or Windsward. I wonder if they have successfully done that. It says they're going to be running fun guild events like giveaways and raffles for gold donations for the first hours and throughout the game. And it says they're at a point where they're going to have... They're at a point where they have 100 people in their company. So they have a second company dedicated to the more casual players right now. Hey. But they are prioritizing people who can be on right at... that's the launch day plan. So
yeah.
It says that they have a... So basically, they have a really competitive company. They have a casual company. It sounds like their competitive company is full. If you want to join them, you'll probably get filtered into the casual company until you can get a spot in the competitive company if you're into that. So go check them out, man. They are... It looks like they are on server Camelot on NA West Faction Syndicate. So
yeah, they have a recruitment video and everything like that. They seem to take the game very seriously. If you're looking for, you know, maybe a way to ease into their company, then you can join their casual one and kind of make a name for yourself. You know, that's what it's all about. You know what I'm saying? Thank you guys so much for posting these on our website. We appreciate all the support we get from our Patreon and everyone like that. So thank you guys for doing that. I will say, it has been a lot of fun with our company. I know a ton of people. The New World kind of cultivates a pretty unique guild environment, so it's cool to see what other people's approaches are to you know, having a company and running a company and stuff. And so, Ghost, you'll have to let us know if you guys ended up achieving your goal of capturing Windsward or Everfall. Guys, thanks so much for listening. We really appreciate it. It's been a great episode. Hopefully you guys enjoyed it too, and we'll see you on another episode of New World to Go.